Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're sitting here at 12:06 a.m., the day after Wink Martindale's firing on 1/22/22, to talk about the Wink Martindale era in Baltimore. Here to join me for this episode is Jim Zipcode. Jim, how you doing, my friend?
Great, Ken. Thank you for having me.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for offering, by the way. Really appreciate the offer. Something, you know, a lot of times you'd like to wait and understand more about this situation as right. It evolves. But I think maybe it's more important to just reflect upon what Wink Martindale brought to the Ravens than what might have been the differences with Harbaugh. And I guess we can't escape an episode like this without speculating on that. But I really want to focus on the good that he did, because he was a terrific defensive coordinator for three full seasons and a fourth one where he had a very difficult deck of cards to play with.
Yeah. I'm shocked that he's gone. Honestly, he seemed to me, to my mind, before Wink, I would say that the quintessential, the archetypal mm-hmm. Ravens defensive coordinator was Rex Ryan. Mm-hmm. You know, if you had to name a defensive coordinator for life for the Ravens, you would have mentioned Rexy, right? Like mm-hmm. he was the guy, you know, organized chaos, you know, the whole nine yards. And I think Wink was in that mold for me as being a guy who I would happily have as defense coordinator for life of the Ravens, a Ravens style of defense that fans liked to watch play. And that was very effective, high risk, high reward, exciting. So I'm shocked about this, honestly.
I am too. And I can't figure out what, you know, there might be. It almost makes me believe there's more to this than we can see. We're seeing the yeah. tip of the iceberg, and there's 80% of it is below the waterline here. But Martindale came to the Ravens, obviously, in 2018 as the DC, but he'd spent 6 years as the linebackers coach before that. The yes. entire Dean Pease era, he was the Ravens linebackers coach. So, you know, this is a succession plan. One of the interesting things about this, this is in terms of really being self-effacing about my own viewpoint. I was kind of upset they hired Martindale so quickly when they did in 2018. I thought, you know, obviously he was a very popular coach internally, had a chance previously in Denver as a defensive coordinator that didn't work out. And it didn't really make sense to me that the premier defensive job in the entire NFL, from my perspective, is immediately handed out to a guy who, you know, had been an internal candidate and you know,
not a high profile guy whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, we should be talking about the hottest coordinators in the league should want this Baltimore job. I mean, it's a great
when you talk about the premier defensive job in the league, what you're talking about is a job that has historically been a springboard to head coaching jobs. You go yeah. back to Marvin Lewis, you go back to Rex Ryan, Chuck Pagano. I mean, this is a job that people take and their next Mike Nolan. Yep. You know, this is a job that people only leave from to become head coaches. I shouldn't say only, but they either leave the NFL like Pops Madison did, or right. or they become head coaches.
I think it might have been four out of five at one point. So Madison was the one guy who hadn't. So Pagano did. Mm-hmm. left and became coach of the Colts, and they had Ryan and Nolan and Lewis. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of
Dean
Pease left, obviously.
He's retired and then unretired. Yeah.
But is there another coordinator we're missing who was here for 1 year that I'm forgetting?
Well, Pagano, I think, was only 1 year, right? So yeah. under Harbs, so before Harbs, it was Marvin Lewis, Mike Nolan, and Rex Ryan, right?
Rex Ryan up through 08, then Madison in 09 and 10, I think, and then Pagano in 11.
And then Pease, mm-hmm. and then Martindale.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. So Martindale, just in terms of it's obviously a very high class group. Jack Del Rio never got the job. He was in a succession plan to get it, but he left for a head coaching job before he got the Ravens job. It's the kind of job that should attract basically the top candidate. You shouldn't yes. have to beg anybody to come to this job. The front office values defense. They draft for it. They spend a lot of capital on the position, both in terms of cap and draft cap. And it's, you know, it should be a very saleable position. Anyway, I was kind of upset. And then we saw who Wink was in his very first season in 2018. And yeah, the Ravens, you know, changed their offense on the fly in that year from a Flacco-led offense to a Jackson-led offense, where they really changed their identity at midseason during that year. Not all the way to the successful 2019 offense, but they ran the football very effectively against some very bad defenses down the stretch and made the playoffs doing it.
And they played complementary football, right, where the defense backed it up and the offense fed the defense.
Yep. That's exactly the point. That defense was perfect for a pace and control offense like the Ravens wanted to run. And you know, it was a progressive despair kind of situation that became even more fun to watch in 2019 when the Ravens really...
Progressive despair, yeah.
Yes.
We touched upon this in the tight ends podcast where you see the other team get ground down, right? You see the body language of the defensive front seven. You see the head coach on the opposing sideline throwing his damn headset. You see the opposing quarterback sitting on the bench, just staring off into space while the Ravens offense is ripping off 5 and 6 yard gains and the clock is just ticking down and the opportunity for the comeback is dwindling. Yeah, exactly. Ken, I think we lost your sound. I see your lips moving.
No, it happens. There we go. Happens every show. So there's a mute accident. So anyway, it happened again. It's, you know, there's a fine middle ground between wanting to be quiet when you're having a drink.
Yes.
And then losing 15 minutes of the podcast, 15 seconds of the podcast. Anyway, that's about 15 minutes of the season in podcasts we've lost to the mute, but I appreciate you.
I think there are two things that I would like to discuss about Wink Martindale, and mm-hmm. one is his fit with the Ravens organizational culture and how that feeds into who the next guy would be. And number two is whether he, quote, deserved, unquote, to be fired off of this season.
Okay, that's reasonable, and let's get to both those points, but I want to start with something a little different, and that is who Wink Martindale really was as a defensive coordinator, because I think a lot of people don't really realize this, and you know, this is the time, I don't want to use, the word is not appropriately used as a eulogy, but this is the appropriate time to really reflect on who Martindale was as a coordinator.
Yes.
And when he came in 18, I mean, he brought a lot of things to the Ravens concept-wise they'd never done before. You know, the package that I refer to as race car, a four outside linebacker package, he was the first one ever to play that. In fact, he played it with five in 2018 on six different snaps. It was a cool thing that he brought in 2018 for a total of six snaps. Anyway, it became a dominant part of the defense in 2019. Where they had a five to make four unit. They had a number
what's
of guys.
What's a five to make four?
Meaning they had five outside linebackers where they were activating four. They had four they could activate on a weekly basis, or sometimes they activated five. And that continued on into 2020 with that five to make four approach. They were able to maintain four even when McPhee got hurt in that Seattle game in 2019. So they still had the personnel to play four outside linebackers on over 13% of the snaps. Now, let's look at the three dominant packages from that year. They played that race car 13.2% of the snaps. They played base defense 10.6% of the time. 10.6. They're base 34 defense. I mean, you play that all the time, right? You know, anytime the opponent has 12 or 21 personnel, you might be in that package. But the Ravens so frequently had the lead, and they knew exactly what to do with it when they had the lead. That Martindale had the luxury of playing a lot of this. The other thing that he had a lot of luxury of playing out was a ton of dime. And the Dean Pease era, the dime had died.
Mm-hmm.
Dean Pease hated it, and Martindale he only really used it towards the end, bringing it back. I think at a threat from Harbaugh, and this may have been a case where Harbaugh and Pease really disagreed at a basic level, and may have been a triangle with the front office, who had a long history of drafting cheap safeties to play that role. And I mean, they might have had the conversation with Pease multiple times is you've got to figure out how to get safeties inside involved in pass defense, because we can get them cheap as hell. And it makes our job of getting platoon linebackers a lot easier.
Right.
This is an organizational decision. It's not your choice.
Right.
And eventually Anthony Levine got the job in 2018, and he had
at the time the
greatest year ever for a Ravens dime. It was eclipsed in 2019 by Clark, and those those two guys and the success they had were, I mean, they were Martindale era guys. Pease allowed a little bit of dime in his last season, but his first 5 years, only 3% dime the Ravens played, which is incredible. If you think about it in today's NFL, that you'd have a coach that was so committed to a two inside linebacker scheme in as progressive a system as the Ravens have had.
I think when you talk about who Wink Martindale is, he's an interesting coach career-wise, and I want to contrast him to a guy on the Ravens staff currently who is being talked about as a hot candidate to replace Martindale, and that's the current linebackers coach, I think, Mike McDonald.
Is actually at Michigan. He was with the Ravens. He went to Michigan for this season,
right?
But he's definitely a candidate to return.
So he's McDonald. So he's often described as a whiz kid coach, a hot candidate, but he's a guy who started his coaching career in the NFL. You know, so he's a bright, shiny face who, so let's contrast that with Wink Martindale, who started his coaching career in 1986 at Defiance College, which I've actually never heard of. I guess it's Division III, who knows? And this is a guy who worked his way up to the NFL. And when you talk about guys who begin their coaching career at nowhere, you know, in high school or Division III or whatever, like the guys mm-hmm. who have to sweep the gym as well as coach, you know, every position and take whoever they're able to get on the team that year and get an effective unit out of them. Those are nuts and bolts coaches who can take guys from high school and form an effective unit out of them. Now, talked about Martindale here. He was at Cincinnati, the College of Cincinnati, from 1996 to 98, which paired him with such names as Jerry Rosberg, John Harbaugh, Rex Ryan. So that, when you look at if you try to identify the cradle of Ravens coaches,
oh, yeah.
You want to look at the mid-90s College of Cincinnati, like coaching roster, coaching staff. That's where a lot of these guys come from. So Wink's relationship with Harbs goes way back to then. Wink's relationship with the Ryan brothers goes back to them. He said at his defensive coordinator hiring press conference that he was the third Ryan brother or the third Ryan twin. And it's interesting when you look at his coaching career, he was an assistant with the Raiders when Rob Ryan was defensive coordinator with the Raiders. And then when Wink was defense coordinator, obviously this season, they hired Rob Ryan to be linebacker's coach. So they switched roles. So this is a guy with deep ties to the Ryan philosophy of attacking defenses and with deep ties to John Harbaugh and what I consider to be deep coaching knowledge in the sense of he started at a ground level coaching non-elite guys and worked his way up to the NFL. So it's a career that I respect tremendously and a background that I respect tremendously. And it's a very tight tie with who the Ravens have been over the last 10 to 20 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we did a show with Deb Panchois over last summer. So it's been almost a year past now, but where we talked about all the defensive coordinators in Ravens history and did kind of compared and contrast. And it's a two-part series if people want to go back and take a look at that. But one of the things about Martindale is he's right up there with Rex in terms of aggressiveness on defense.
Blitz percentage and stuff like that?
Blitz percentage for sure, but also just scheming for pressure. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Ravens have not done as much of that. They certainly did not do as much of it with Pease. And, I would just say the natural bent of Dean Pease was more of a...
cover.
I'm only going to provide the amount of pressure that I think is necessary to reach the minimum of the boiling point. Mm-hmm. Whereas Martindale's thing is I'm going to try to ratchet up the pressure all the way up to here. And then I might dial it back. So they're kind of approaching.
Wink's going to provide the minimum coverage necessary to be able to throw the kitchen sink at you.
Yeah. and be able to maintain a lot of different trickery, because the Ravens, I've looked at the Ryan era and the Martindale era in terms of the key components, which are the three key deception components, which are simulated pressures. That's the number of times you drop two plus from the line of scrimmage, and Wink and Ryan are in the same group there. They both did it a lot. Number two is how often you blitz somebody from off the line of scrimmage. And Ryan did that even more than Wink did.
Okay.
I guess not surprising to people who really know Rex Ryan that he would be more aggressive in that manner. And then stunts are the third. And those are kind of inversely related to blitzes in some ways, but both coaches are about the same there, which I would have expected not to be true. The big stunting defensive coordinator of all time is Marvin Lewis. He had the early Ravens teams, and in particular the 99 and 2000 Ravens, who are both very good, stunt a ton.
Very good. Would you yes. say they were very good defenses?
Yes. The 99 team, a lot of people, you know, whose memory, Pittsburgh Steelers history begins for Pittsburgh Steelers fans at the Immaculate Reception.
Right.
Ravens history starts.
Begins in 2000, in 2000. Not the case.
It's true of the media guide too, by the way. It's just awful.
The 99 unit was very good.
It was great. And you know, they got scarred by the Mitchell thing and losing a couple games at the beginning of the year, but they came back with a great 4-game winning streak. And that was the beginning of the dynasty. I mean, that was
the beginning of Ray Lewis too. Yeah. Like it'd be as an elite player.
I would argue he was already elite, but that's okay. We don't have to disagree on that. Let's talk about Wink again. The package specificity is the other thing, is that Wink always had a very extreme package for a very extreme situation. And in fact, he really had a more extreme package.
What do you mean? What's an extreme package?
Okay, so race car, or mm-hmm. playing a lot of quarter when you need to play quarter would be something, or playing dime when it's appropriate. You know, he would change his strategy, you know, from game to game during the season to use a lot of big nickel as needed against teams that wanted to play a lot of 12 personnel. And he didn't really want to have a third cornerback on the field, yet he knew that tight end was going to often be split wide, and he wanted to have an appropriate guy to cover him. Well, he put a third safety instead of a third corner on the field.
He was unafraid. You know, I'm sorry, I'm trying to say four different things at once, and I'm getting a little tongue-tied here. To me, this ties into the point of having worked with non-elite players. You know, so what I would call beginning players and very young players, you know, guys who did not have an NFL future. And he was used to teaching that kind of guy. And when he got to the NFL and when he had NFL caliber talent and really all pro caliber talent with the Ravens, he was unafraid to turn those guys loose and rely on the teaching and their instincts. And who I want to contrast him with, and I don't have your numbers here. This is just a fan's eyeball opinion. But I thought that Dean Pease had a highly structured defense to the point where it had so many rules that guys would sometimes be hesitant and not play to their instincts. In other words, you would sometimes see guys play a little slow.
It wasn't a good era for the Ravens from 12 to 17. They had one great pass rush unit in 2014. The defense was otherwise, I thought, you know, I don't believe Dean Pease was a bad defensive coordinator.
Not at all.
Start with that. Not at all.
No.
I think that other teams, if you're looking at where does he fall on the spectrum, he still falls 75th percentile of all defensive coordinators in the league and where you could have. He probably did not take full advantage of the playmakers the Ravens had on defense in that era. They didn't have Ray Lewis. They didn't have Ed Reed. That's true. But they had Terrell Suggs, and they had Haloti Ngata, and they had other players who did some awfully good things. Jimmy Smith would be another example of that. Where they did lack at some during that era was at safety. And they got Weddle at the, you know, the very end of that, but they had a bunch of bad safeties, including Elam and Ihedebo and players like that, that were in there for, you know, a fair amount of playing time as well.
What year was the playoff game versus the Patriots with the ineligible receiver?
14.
So to me, and you know, it's easy as a fan to put too much weight on a specific thing. Mm-hmm. I'm not in the room, whatever, but that particular situation to me was The confusion that the Patriots created in the Ravens defense on those plays would never have happened when Ray and Ed were on the field, you know, because of the intelligence and the film study and the reactivity to the situation. You know, those guys would have identified the mismatch in what was trying to be accomplished, and they would have adjusted. In other words, there was a high degree of spontaneous reactive intelligence on the field, you know, players with initiative who could recognize that this situation is non-standard to our rules, so we're going to need to adapt.
Right. They had a rookie inside linebacker, CJ Mosley, that season, so it's easy to put the blame on him. He only got the green dot at about week six at Tampa. Whenever they played Tampa, that was his first game. You know, they had, I guess, Zach Orr was their second linebacker that year. I'm trying to remember who was the other inside guy, but it's true. They didn't have that one guy who could pick up on that, and I think, you know, Harbaugh reacted like he did, including an intentional penalty to say that, hey, this represents a personnel change. You need to allow us to react to this defensively if he says he's eligible.
And do you remember the Patriots' imperfect season, 2007?
Yeah,
right,
yep.
Yeah. So the Ravens, you know, they had that. So that game came down to a fourth down play, and, mm-hmm. and you know, Rex Ryan called a timeout. Mm-hmm. But, you know, so on that particular play, Ray and Ed were on the field, and the Patriots did something deceptive, which caused Rexy to want to call a timeout. I think the Ravens maybe were in run defense personnel and the Patriots shifted to a pass formation or the other way around. But if you watched the Ravens defenders, and I'm talking about the individual defenders watching right. their eyes and their faces, they were all over it. You know, Ray was pointing this guy out and that guy out. They were adjusting and they had it under control, you know, on their own initiative and from their own intelligence, they were able to make the adjustments on the fly. Now, I mean, Hall of Famers, fine. But Dean, to me, so I've coached basketball. And when I say mm-hmm. I've coached basketball, like I'm not exactly Mike Krzyzewski. I coach 10-year-old girls and 11-year-old girls.
There you go.
Okay. But your job is to give the players the instincts and knowledge and situational awareness and, you know, recognition to adjust to things to see and adjust to things. Mm-hmm. Right. And the defenses with, you know, obviously with Ray Lewis on the field, obviously with Ed Reed on the field, who was the guy? He for a while played outside linebacker. I think he was a defensive lineman in college. For a while led the Ravens historically in games played, and then he shifted to the Chargers for the end of his career.
Jared Johnson.
That's another guy who is phenomenally intelligent. He knew exactly where he needed mm-hmm. to be and where other players needed to be. So that's empowerment of players to adjust on the fly to what needs to be done. And then you get Dean Pease, who I think was a phenomenal teacher and structurer of defensive mm-hmm. schemes. You had a lot of young players and you wanted to build a new defense, great at that. But I felt as a watcher that his defenses were so highly structured that sometimes the rules could get in the way of the players' natural instinctive reactions. And so when you go back to Wink Martindale, and this is where I've been trying to bring this for the last mm-hmm. few minutes, this is a guy who very much empowered his players to read and react and adjust on the fly and do the things that they felt they needed to do.
Players coach, that's for sure. We saw that come up in the game where he got sacks by five different defensive mm-hmm. backs.
Yeah.
And that's remarkable to happen in one game, period. And what's the all-time record? By two, by the way. The previous record had been three. So it was remarkable from several perspectives there. But I agree with your other comment about you know, trusting your players to be who they are. I mean, Marcus Peters was a player who a lot of teams hadn't really figured out how to use properly. You know, they wanted to stop gambling. Well, no, that's the wrong use of Marcus Peters. Have him gamble and make the good gambles. It's like Marcus Peters is a card counter back there. Telling him not to gamble is a mistake.
Yes.
You know, he will figure out, you know, what is a good risk and not. And I'm not claiming that Marcus Peters, you know, knows the percentages well enough to judge but he knows them intuitively, kind of like a great center fielder knows the differential equation necessary to catch a fly ball.
Right.
You know,
yes.
he knows them intuitively. And those gambles, I mean, you're going to get burned occasionally, and occasionally he's going to make a very big play. And he made more big ones than he got burned by in the Ravens. At least he made enough big ones to make up and then some for the plays on which he got burned. And I felt the same way about Ed Reed. The notions, anybody who told me Ed Reed gambles too much,
no.
Immediately, that guy drops in my estimation of his football knowledge tremendously. I'm going to have a hard time having a conversation with that guy.
Yeah.
And 20-year-old Ken would have gotten upset with the guy and really put him down over that all the time and made an effort to kind of got into an argument about this. 58-year-old Ken, at least, could just let the guy go.
Right.
But I don't have a lot of respect for that. And unfortunately, I find some of that as well for people who can't immediately find the good grounds for talking about why Greg Roman ought to be fired. I'm not saying there are none.
Right.
But you better come up with a good argument that doesn't say, well, look what happened this season. Bad play call after bad play call. Well, no, that's not what I saw this season.
Right.
And I, you know,
I saw bad results.
Yes, that's true. I just need you to come to the table with a better argument. So that is one show we're going to do. And I've got a couple guys coming on who do have a good idea of, like, they're not, the Ravens weren't, you know, building to a plan, or they weren't making the best use of the assets they have. That's fine. Let's talk that out. But it's just bad play calling that cost the 2021 Ravens a season. That's complete horseshit. I mean, just complete crap.
So I want to highlight a similarity between Greg Roman and Wink Martindale that maybe not everyone's aware of. So everyone knows that ahead of the 2019 season, so during that offseason from 18 to 19, from Lamar's rookie season to Lamar's MVP season, Greg Roman rebuilt the Ravens' offensive playbook. So the way it was reported is that he streamlined some of the verbiage. Mm-hmm. He clustered similar play calls into similar wording, you know, so that concepts were linked by similar words. And I'm using vague terms because I've never seen the Ravens playbook. I don't know what he did exactly. But the reporting was that he made it simpler to use and for the quarterback to call and for players to learn. The year before that, Wink Martindale's first season as Ravens defensive coordinator, Martindale spearheaded the same effort for the defense, and Harbaugh supported him in that. So they streamlined the defensive calls, reduced the verbiage, or maybe rationalized the verbiage. I don't know what they did to the verbiage. They made it easier for the players to structure and call. They did the same sweeping overhaul of the defensive playbook that they did of the offensive playbook, and for similar reasons, to make it more user-friendly for the players, easier to teach young players and new players. And that is a huge undertaking. It's a bold undertaking. And the 2019 to 20 Ravens led the league in fewest points allowed
across those two seasons.
and in points scored, so therefore obviously in differential, right? But we're talking about the defense coordinator here. So so he was an innovator, both in the schematic things that you were talking about, like the usage of dime and so forth, and also the use of extreme packages, but also in the verbiage and design of the Ravens defensive playbook. And he was working within the tradition of the Ryan brothers and, you know, a deep Ravens connection. So this is a guy who is not to be lightly dismissed.
I do not lightly dismiss him. In fact, he's probably the third greatest defensive coordinator the Ravens ever had.
And I'm going to argue that he might be the best. Yeah.
That's fair. I mean, and he's definitely in that top three with Ryan. By the way, Ryan had two good years out of four. Ryan got away with a trip to the bathroom in 2007, where he had a incredibly injured. Well, that's what you call it when it was a bad game, a bad season.
Okay.
I believe there's a
reference to shit here. Is that where a trip to the bathroom comes from?
You can make up your own thing with it. A trip to the bathroom is actually something I read in an old Bill James book once. I picked up the lingo from there. But anyway, he had the 2007 season was completely injury marred in the Ravens secondary.
Topped,
I think, by this season. Yeah, but it's very similar. I used to call that the secondary of dying men. This year, the Ravens were so much deeper to start with.
Right.
At corner, the fall was greater. It's just like they had an Everest of defensive backs to start the year, so much that they were trading guys they just drafted. to get a draft return in Sean Wade. And then they fell so far into the ranks of the undrafted, unwanted street free agent guys.
Right. So by the end of the season, they are signing guys off the street to start for them the following week.
Worley,
against
Seymour
friggin'
Jackson.
Jamar Chase. I mean, come on. It's preposterous. So that addresses the argument about whether Wink Martindale's performance earned him a firing. I think you and I agree, no way.
Yeah. So we don't know. I mean, we're doing this the night after. Right. The information has not all emerged in terms of how this transpired, what the plan was. I've heard one very credible thing online that I think I agree with is that Harbaugh probably knew this was coming, and Martindale as well, but as a goodwill gesture, and I think it was a good one, they wanted to keep it a secret until after head coaching interviews were done, just so it wouldn't be a black mark on his record that he'd have to explain. And so it honestly is later than I would normally expect a defense coordinator to be fired for a team that wants to get it restarted as quickly as possible. And I think the Ravens probably behind the scenes have already been looking. And they've already been, calling up a couple of guys they like, McDonald probably among them, in terms of, hey, when can we get you down here? We're gonna be making a move soon.
So I want to point out two things. First of all, the Ravens have never brought in an outside defense coordinator. Every defense coordinator has been an internal promotion.
Well, McDonald was a previous right. Okay, that's great. But McDonald was an internal guy for a number of years with the Ravens already.
Oh yeah, I'm saying. So if McDonald, right? So McDonald could be viewed as an internal candidate because he has been with the Ravens for a long time. Likewise, Joe Cullen, who left this past year to go, did he go to the Jacksonville to be their coordinator?
I don't know. And what did he go coordinator or defensive line coach?
I believe coordinator. He was for the Ravens. He was the defensive line coach, so they could hire Cullen and view him as a quasi internal hire as well. But
I know, Cullen has not yet been fired, so I wouldn't expect him to be a guy who would be coming back to Baltimore, but I don't know.
But so the people who expect Eric Weddle, for example, to enter the NFL as a defense coordinator, Harbaugh will never in his life hire a guy straight from college to be a coordinator. It's not going to happen. And the Ravens as an organization have never brought in an outside guy. Every guy has been on last year's staff, has ascended to the coordinator role. So I find that very interesting. And we're talking about a legacy, a tradition of, Marvin Lewis to Rex Ryan to Mike Nolan, who we don't regard super highly now, but at the time was very hot, to Rexy, to Pops Madison, to Chuck Pagano. I mean, it's. So the other thing I want to mention is, and I find this really intriguing, in the John Harbaugh era, when he has changed defensive coordinators, he has changed styles. You know, so Rex, he began with Rex, and Rex was, I think we could safely call him aggressive. And the guy who replaced Rex was a guy whom I would call a fairly vanilla coach in Greg Madison. He believed in guys winning their individual matchups, not in a lot of schemed pressure. And so we went from Greg Madison to Chuck Pagano, who was crazy.
Yeah, Pagano was a wild man. Yeah. Didn't have the long enough tenure to really compare him to some of the other big ones, but he did a lot. He did a lot of scheming for pressure, that's for sure.
Yeah, he sent the kitchen sink. And I'd like to put a pin in this. One of my favorite defensive plays of all time was actually a situation where the ball was not snapped in the Chuck Pagano era. But then, so after Pagano, we went from a guy who was absolutely insane in terms of aggressiveness to Dean Pease, who I think was, we've talked about him already as being a very structured, kind of sound, coverage first, just enough pressure guy. And we went from Pease to Wink, who was, a high pressure send the house guy. So when you look at that alternation, and I even think that there's a case to be made that switching styles might enhance your defense, right? If you've got a defense that is great at organized chaos and you have them play, if you switch them to like a sounder style, going from Rex Ryan to Greg Madison, you get like some addition there. You get some additional structure, maybe. You go from that to aggressive, you get some additional, you're with the scheme change, with a style change, with an emphasis change, you're right. adding an element to a defense that it didn't have under the last guy.
Yeah, you may and be able to take advantage of other qualities those players hadn't been right. maximizing and get them to do things, remembering both styles even.
Yes.
To still be able
and
to
so
play.
To me, that is a clue, right? Like, what if the reason that Martindale and Harbaugh have had perhaps a philosophical parting of the ways? Mm-hmm. What if the idea is that we've got to match up with, you know, Josh Allen in Buffalo and Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City and whoever, Joe Burrow, for God's sakes, mm-hmm. we're the Ravens, if they're going to advance in the playoffs in the AFC, they're going to have to cover. And, you know, what if this is a, you know, Wink doesn't want to not send the house. He doesn't want to not blitz. He doesn't want to sit back. And so this is...
I could just tell you, this year, there was tremendous variation in what he did by game yeah. and by quarterback to do that. So I think it would be really unfair to Wink to say that he wasn't extremely adaptable. He was. He's a very extreme game plan, and that goes in both directions in terms of really holding off on the blitz and using a lot of four-man pressure and doing it with both numbers and with deception.
I honestly, I agree with you. I think that he should never have left the Ravens. But if I'm trying to construct an argument for what the hell's going on, to me that suggests that the next guy is going to be a little bit of a sounder, coverage-based, only send enough guys defensive coordinator.
Yeah, we won't know for some time what really happened here, because it just seems like there must be something else, whether it's a personal disagreement I could come up with other things that I don't even want to speculate on.
God forbid a family illness.
Could be a personal illness. Could be all kinds of individual family matters, you know, that are out there
needs to spend more time with his family for something that we need to pray for them for. And that would be terrible news, you know?
Yeah. But it could also be a philosophical difference where, Harbaugh believes one thing, and they've talked about it a number of times, and they just don't see eye to eye on it. And I think Harbaugh and Dean Pease really did have that argument about the dime defense, is that mm-hmm. Harbaugh, being a defensive backs coach at one point, obviously everybody knows him for a special teams thing, but the year before he was a DB coach. I think he really felt like they weren't doing enough to get the right personnel on the field in third down. And it could be that there is some philosophical difference there. I'll give you another one. It could be developmental, is that he doesn't like the way that Martindale has tried to get young players advanced. And obviously, Patrick Queen is not where the Ravens want him to be. Malik Harrison is not where the Ravens want him to be in terms of you know, advancing in this league in the right place. And you could come up with other players too, but those are two pretty damn big ones.
Yeah,
and Ravens spent a lot of draft capital there, Martindale has to take some of the blame, even though, you know, Rob Ryan was brought in. If you let Rob Ryan, you know, use his shtick with Patrick Queen and it doesn't work out, and you're the defensive coordinator, you're still ultimately responsible, and you're ultimately responsible as the head coach too.
Absolutely. So, how did we not mention Rob Ryan as a possible?
He's not a candidate.
I would hope he's not a candidate.
Yeah.
But I mean, he certainly has the resume to be a defense coordinator in the NFL.
I think for the right opportunity, but in his case, it's really be for the wrong opportunity. I think it could happen. I don't think it'll happen here in Baltimore. I really don't see it.
I'm praying that that's true. I was shocked that he was hired.
It was an interesting move, and I thought, okay, I'm going to go through a little bit here, because I watched very closely at camp this last year how the interactions between Rob Ryan and Patrick Queen. And here's one of the interesting things, is that Patrick Queen does not play special teams. They have mm-hmm. a 20-minute special team session at the beginning of, I don't know if it's each practice, but it's at least most practices. It might be every practice. So that's the first thing they go out there and they do. Well, if you don't play special teams, you're in your positional group, or you're doing some fundamental things. It so happens that every other inside linebacker plays special teams for the Baltimore Ravens. Welch, you know, Malik Harrison, Board, all those guys are special teams players. So Patrick Queen is standing over there alone with Rob Ryan for 20 minutes. Now, during that time, at first, Rob Ryan was doing some things that were almost cartoonish in nature, but seemed to be a positive you know, learning thing for Queen. He's moving around a towel and he's saying, I'm this guy, you know, where do your hips go if this is a tight end here? And I mean, it's a lot of very specific, position-specific coaching that I saw there. And we, you know, all the talk about Patrick Queen was he didn't have that position-specific coaching. As the camp wore on, one of the things that started happening was they had these tackling donuts they use. I don't know why.
It's like a big tire, right? Like a giant truck tire.
And then they roll a tackling donut, and you know the idea is you grab it and your arms
one arm in. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you get your arms inside the donut and you make the tackle that way. So anyway, I don't know why Patrick Queen became so attached to a tackling donut, given you know what we've seen in the regular season and tacklings from it, but he would kind of lean on the tackling donut. And there's certain things growing up playing football you even learn is that coaches don't like you to sit down at practice. Okay. They don't like
Arms
you.
Arms doesn't even like the reporters to sit down.
Yes.
Practice.
He won't allow you to sit down if you're a reporter. That's absolutely true. Only Ozzy and DaCosta get to sit down. And otherwise if you're a reporter, you have to stand up.
I imagine Bishotti can sit down too.
Yeah. Back at the building. Yeah. Anyway, the point I was making was that it seemed to devolve as camp moved on into something much less useful for Patrick Queen. And so for that reason alone, I'd say I am not at all impressed with what Rob Ryan brought to the 2021 Ravens. I don't expect him to be back as an assistant. He may go somewhere else in the NFL because he's been a journeyman, obviously, but I don't expect him to be back with the Ravens as an assistant or as an inside linebacker coach. So if he's around the camp, maybe.
His resume, to me, he's clearly the lesser Ryan brother. Mm-hmm. And he has been associated with a hell of a lot of underperforming defenses in his career, in my opinion. Yeah. Certainly in New Orleans and other places.
His job was so specific in this case. And, you know, it's apparent to a untrained eye, mm-hmm. you know, that this just, he's not getting through this guy. He doesn't relate to Patrick Queen the way you would hope a defensive coordinator would be able to you know, get on him. And that's what Patrick Queen needs. I mean, just, he needs position specific coaching, yes. How to tackle, how to shed blocks, how to identify coverages off the line of scrimmage, how to figure out what the hell is going on behind you. You know, all of those things are position specific. I made this point a couple times on this show. I do not want to see workout videos from Patrick Queen this offseason. I want to see position specific coaching in practice. I want to see him doing that. You want to, if you're Patrick Queen's agent out there and you somehow get a listen to this because somebody told you, the videos you want to freaking have Patrick Queen post are of him doing something which is obviously learning coverage technique or learning how to tackle properly this offseason, not, you know, how much can I lift, how much can I, how fast can I run, how quickly do I look going through these ropes or whatever it might be, or tires. I mean, just don't waste my time. So
what did you think of Queen's, so famously Queen had a position shift to the weak side and seemed to blossom. Is that how you see it?
Talked a little bit about this with Michael Crawford on the inside linebacker positional review. So I'll let people go back to that show if they want a thorough treatment of it. But basically, he had some good games and he did a lot of some things a lot better. He
keyed some splash plays too.
Yeah, he keyed off Josh Bynes in a lot of ways when he wasn't maybe sure of his own responsibility. And Josh Bynes is very good at that, has very good play speed that's not reflective in his actual speed. And Queen was able to do a lot with that. And he's just a much better chase player, much better trail player than he is at the guy at the heavy side of the formation. And so I thought it was a good move for him. He regressed also towards the end of the year and had some more bad tackling games. So, you know, there was an up and down performance. Patrick Queen has a lot to learn about playing the inside linebacker position, and the excuses are no longer valid. He's been in the NFL for 2 years. Sure, he missed his first year in training camp, and sure, he's learning the position late and blah, 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 blah. I don't care anymore. You know, they have 1 year to decide whether or not they're going to sign Patrick Queen to that fifth year option. This is his year to be a star for the Baltimore Ravens. And if he can't do that, he's let the Ravens down. If he can't demonstrate clearly that he has to be signed to that fifth-year option, he's let the Ravens down. And unfortunately, I think that's what we're probably headed for.
So in a discussion about Wink Martindale, this leads us to his handling of the development of the inside linebacker prospects. Mm-hmm. might all by itself be justification for making a change at that coaching position, whether it's his handling of them specifically or his entrusting the development to Rob Ryan and that's a bad judgment or whatever. That in itself is reason to make a change. I could buy
that. It's you know, it's a possible reason. You know, more of the story will come out, and I'd rather not speculate any further than that. We're trying to talk about who Wink is, and largely he's a great defensive coordinator that we really appreciate. And you know, if there were three or four straws that broke the camel's back, you know, there were some other heavier weights that broke the camel's back before then, and it's probably going to come out why this exactly occurred or what was the schism between Harbaugh and Martindale that didn't really allow them to see eye to eye on things. And I just don't want to speculate right now as to what.
So one of the things that will be very telling will be what Martindale does next. You know, if it's not a personal issue or family issue that requires time off from him, then he will unquestionably land on a defensive coaching staff somewhere as a coordinator or a linebackers coach, because he is just too damn good, and he's demonstrated that he's too damn good. So where he winds up will tell us a lot about what the discussion was or what happened here. I'm sad, honestly. I loved watching his defenses play. I think that something that fans got on him a lot for was how many long touchdowns the Ravens gave up, and often on blitzes. And to me, I would give him a complete mulligan on this year. You know, Jamar Chase running free against a guy who wasn't even on the roster 2 weeks ago. To me, that tells me nothing good or bad about Wink Martindale's skills as a defensive coach. It's just a mismatch, personnel, nothing you can do about it. To me, what tells me more is the performance of the 19 and 20 defenses cumulatively and the adjustments he made against the Chiefs this year. That tells me more.
Yeah, against the Chiefs, against other teams as well, but I would agree that's a great place to start. You know, if you want to think about one other thing that might have been the end, is that the Ravens had one of their worst ever tackling seasons this year, and it starts at inside linebacker, where a lot of the issues were, but there were a lot of issues at safety in terms of not getting people on the ground. Clark had a decent year. Elliott had some problems. Stevens had more.
And do the Ravens have enough speed at safety to get in position to tackle as well as they need to against the kind of players that the Ravens deep secondary plays against?
It kind of depends on who you're talking about, whether you know, you're talking about Elliott or Stone. It's a whole nother conversation. It's too much to get into, but I like where the Ravens are headed in terms of having more safeties on the roster. I think they'll go with five safeties this next year, all of whom can play as needed on defense. So they won't have a Levine next year where he's not really a guy they want to have on the field on defense. They showed a great willingness to have Tony Jefferson on the field. Of course, it's, you know, week 15, week 16 when that starts happening. And you know, the Ravens didn't have anybody left, but then he played very well. And so I think it would be exciting to get him back on some sort of deal that would be Levine-esque, maybe allow him to take Tony's role as the Anthony's role as the head of the special teams units. And also play dime.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I thought I interrupted you.
No, that's it. It's play dime and play quarter for that matter, because I think the Ravens, you know, there's no inside linebacker the Ravens have who they really would like to have on the field currently on a passing down.
Yeah.
It's just that simple. I mean, Patrick Queen should not be on the field, and neither should
Queen has the physical traits to be the guy that they think they want on the field, but he doesn't process. He doesn't have the knowledge, let's say, the play knowledge.
Yeah.
And do you think that they need to draft a safety?
They it's certainly a position they could invest at. So if they have their guy on the board when it's time to pick, and he's the free safety of the future, I have no problem with that. If they want to go out and buy the free safety for a few years, I don't have a problem with that either. If Jesse Bates is their guy, I'm okay with that. You know, he's certainly a ball hawk, and he might be a little undervalued this year. We'll see. A handful of different, you know, ways they could approach this, but the needs on the defensive line at cornerback and offensive tackle are so great.
Yeah.
They're going to have a very hard time overlooking those. But if the second round pick, I think, is the earliest I would expect a great free safety choice to be made. And it's got to be a free safety.
Yeah,
it
can't
be a strong safety.
That's the talent type safety that they have not had. They've had the combo guys and the strongs, but they have not had the guy who could play single high if necessary, the free safety.
Right. So Stone is really the only guy on the team right now who fits that mold. And he's a good, patient, behind the receiver bracketer, which makes him a good interceptor. But a lot of people would tell you he doesn't have the speed, and that's why he lasts into the seventh round to really play any more than half the field on a cover two. All right, we got to call it here in terms of this. Jim, so appreciate having you on for this show. I appreciate you offering to do it, staying up well into the night to get it done. And, it is a sad day in Ravens history and Wink is gone. And I, as much as I would love there to be a reason, I really hope it's nothing personal. And it's a difference of opinion between him and Harbaugh, as opposed to something, worse that might really require him to step away from football for a period of time.
I think I'm with you. Best wishes, the hopes to him and his family. I'm in an odd position as a fan, right? Because he's my guy. I don't want to see him go elsewhere. So I caught myself almost wishing that it was not a philosophical difference, but then I realized the implications would be suffering for like his family or something. So I guess I'm wrong. I absolutely don't hope for that. But if it is something like that, hopefully it's speedily resolved and whatever. And we won't know for weeks what's going on and maybe for months.
All right. Well, Jim, tell folks again where they can get in contact and talk football with you.
Well, so I'm on Twitter. I'm at @Zip_Jim, or maybe just search for Jim Zip Code on Twitter. I have over the years been on the RSR forums, not so much this past season, but you can find me sometimes on the RSR front page. I've been doing a weekly, during the season, I was doing a weekly breakdown of the Ravens receivers. The final installment of which will be coming out pretty shortly as soon as I write it. But that's where I am.
All right. Outstanding to have you, Jim. And other folks out there, I'm looking for people to do a Fixing the Ravens series with me. So if you have a fairly narrowly defined fix for the Ravens offensively or defensively, fire Greg Roman is too broad. How the Ravens need to depend more on a big nickel defense against 12 personnel teams might be perfect. Something that specifically addresses, a group of players or a specific stratagem to really get at how can the Ravens fix themselves offensively and defensively coming into this 2022 season. Because it's obviously a team with some significant holes right now that they're going to have to fill through the draft, free agency, and scheme changes as well. Jim, thanks again for coming on.
Ken, thank you for having me so much. I can't tell you how much I enjoy all of these that I get to do with you.
Love talking football with you, Jim, and we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.